I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Poshnosh Girl, and today I'm joined by the wonderful Ching He Huang. Ching is one of the most popular chefs on our screens, with regular appearances on daytime TV, and has written multiple cookbooks. She's a true culinary entrepreneur and has built several food businesses and was supplying our high street supermarkets before the age of 25. Most of all, she has a drive and energy second to none and is an iconic inspiration for all young women looking to forge a career they desire. Welcome, Ching. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Well, I really appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us. So how are you spending your time during lockdown?
So it's been an interesting time. Just lots of cooking and reading and gardening. I'm really grateful for the time that I've got, actually, because normally it's really crazy busy, always rushing around. You know, there's classes or meetings and events. So it's been lovely, actually, if I'm honest, just to kind of slow down. Yeah. And just have some time for family. Lots of catching up, I mean, not face-to-face, sadly, but lots of catching up on the phone, on Zoom, on Skype, and yeah, it's been good. It's been a very reflective time.
Yeah, so you mentioned that you're reading. I know you like to read a lot. Which book would you say has made the biggest impact on you?
Wow, okay, that's quite difficult. I have various books. So I've got my cookbooks, obviously, that I love and enjoy. And I have an array from amazing chefs. So I'm quite proud of that. A really great selection. Some of them are signed by them, some of them not yet. So that's on the bucket list as well. And then I have self-empowering sort of books, self-empowerment books. So I like to try and always improve myself and always learn something new. So, you know, I have books on my shelf from Eckhart Tolle, from, you know, from The Secret, the popular books. I've got yoga books, Sivananda Yoga. I've been given Five Tibetans yoga book recently, and I'm really enjoying that. Just an array of books, really. But yeah, I'm also enjoying The Seat of the Soul, and that's a recommend by Oprah Winfrey. So I haven't read that yet. So by Gary Yukov. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I've heard of that one, actually. That's one of my lists as well.
Yeah.
So you've had incredibly interesting beginnings. You were born in Taiwan, you were raised in South Africa, and you made your career in the UK. How have all the cultural differences influenced you?
Oh gosh. So so from Taiwan, you know, it was growing up on my grandparents' farm, and it was very much about, you know, traditional Chinese culture, and also food culture, about living off the land, about trying to be sustainable, about living with seasons, and living with what we have, and being frugal. And so those are the values that I was brought up with, and also of sharing and community and being neighborly. You know, back in the day, you know, in Taiwan, there wasn't much industry. So it was still very much a farming community. So everyone looked out for each other, and everyone still does look out for each other. And I love that simplicity of life and philosophy. And then I went from one farm, which is my grandparents' farm in Taiwan, to another farm in South Africa, because my father got into business with a South African businessman, because my father was the only one that out of seven children to get a degree. And so he thought, I've got to do business. And at that time in South Africa, and this was 1984, the mode of transport around was bicycles. And Taiwan, you know, everything was made in Taiwan back then. And bicycles were a great way to get around. And so him and his friend decided to export bicycles. So before we knew it, we went from my grandparents' farm to another farm, which is Uncle Robert's farm. and we stayed with him. And so it was really quite an interesting time, you know, learning a different culture, different traditions, you know, different foods, different way of life, essentially, you know, Western way of life. And the foods that we had, you know, things like boerewors, biltong, this is like South African sausages, like dried beef jerky, you know, mealies pap, kind of like a grainy type, you know, gruel. So it was all very different. My mother clung to her Chinese-ness by taking us to a Chinese supermarket in the center of Joburg every Sunday, and she'd get her supplies and she'd stock up on things like tinned abalone, you know, tinned bamboo shoots, soy sauce, dark and light, you know, rice wine, all of that. And she was adamant in keeping a traditional sort of Chinese cooking at home, home cooking, because that's what she was brought up on. But using, of course, this time fresh produce, you know, in South Africa, whatever we had, basically. So she would used to make me things like, I mean, avocados are now obviously all the rave, but she used to make me avocado on bread, you know, with a fried egg and soy sauce, and that'd be my breakfast, you know, for me and my brother. So yeah, it was really fun times in South Africa. But then we moved from South Africa in 1989 to move to London. And this time we didn't end up in a farm, but we ended up in North London. And it was a time when South Africa was going through apartheid. So Nelson Mandela was about to be freed, and there was big riots everywhere. It was quite unstable, and everyone was leaving South Africa. And my father thought, you know, right, we've got to move somewhere more stable. And so he chose the UK, and that's why we moved here. But then things took kind of a downward turn. In 1990, there was a recession. Everything that my father invested in the UK, just overnight, he lost. He had to pay about £250,000 for an entrepreneur's visa at that time. Wow. To emigrate. And it was quite a lot of money at that time. Really? Yeah, it was quite substantial. And but then, you know, he started importing things and sold into the retail stores. But in 1990, he couldn't get the money back because the stores shut and they didn't pay. So in the end, you know, he lost everything that he'd made for himself in South Africa. And so at that time, I was around 11, 12, going on 12. And my mother then went back to Taiwan to work. And so that was how I started cooking and learned how to cook, because my mother was away a lot. So she would teach me before she went away, and I would cook for my father because he's a really bad cook. So that's how it all began, really. And I cooked the family meals. I went to day school. My brother was in boarding school, and we tried to make things work for us as a family. But by the time I was 15, I almost left school, it was a very coincidental meeting with my headmistress. She found me working illegally in Brancross, in a clothing store, on a late Thursday night. She called me into her office next day, and I said, "I'm really sorry, Mrs. Pond, but I'm going to have to leave school next year after my GCSEs, and after this year after my GCSEs, and that's it, really." And she asked me why, and I said, "We can't continue to pay the school fees, and that's why I had to work." And so she said, "Well, if you do well in your grades, then you can stay on scholarship, 90% scholarship."
Wow.
Which, you know, was amazing. And I worked really hard that summer, and I got the grades, and I made it through, did my A-levels, then went on to university. But after university, I set up my food business. I worked all the way throughout to pay my way through. And luckily at that time, the degree was essentially subsidized, you know, by the government. We had grant system. And so I was very lucky then, and still continued to work, and then graduated. But before graduating, that's when I started to set up my food business called Fuji at the time. It was like a catering, small catering business, just grew out of nothing, next to nothing, £500 that we had left, and labels from Corquick and ingredients from like Wing Yip, and just made these samples, and I took them to a buyer at Europa Foods, and I was like, here you go, you need cool noodle salads because Prange are doing sushi, so you need to catch up. And Tim Marland is the buyer at the time, and he thought I was really crazy and maybe a bit silly, and I had no idea about business, but you know, I had to do something, because by that time we were in quite a bad situation financially, and it had gone on for so many years that I had no choice, really. All my friends were going into banking, law firms, accountancy, you know, but I thought I need to go into business. I mean, and food was all I knew at that time.
You graduated with economics.
I graduated with an economics degree, yes. Yeah. And I could have gone into banking, and I could have gone into the city. I don't know. It also didn't appeal to me. It was really an inspiration. Walking past Pret after, you know, my one of my lectures, and I thought, oh, okay, they do sushi, great. And then I looked beside it, and they were starting to do these noodle boxes. Mm. And they were for about £2.99, just with plain wheat flour noodles, bean sprouts, just a couple, small handful, and a sachet of soy sauce and some toasted sesame seeds. And I thought that actually was the moment, because I was like, oh my gosh, this is so uninspiring. And it's so expensive, you know, to a student at that time. Yeah. And I thought I could do better. And I had this naivety that, you know, I could do better. And that actually Taiwanese noodle salads are so much more delicious. You know, we have peanut sauce. We have, you know, like shredded cucumber and carrots, and it's more vibrant. And we have like a spiced soy sauce to go with it as well. And the whole thing comes together really nicely. So I thought that I could do better, basically.
And you could do better because you ended up in Waitrose.
Well, not quite Waitrose with that particular product, but we ended up in Cullen's Europa stores. There were 120 stores in London, and they gave me my big break. And you know, to this day, I'm very grateful for them. But now, obviously, they've been bought. Some of them have been bought by Tesco and these guys. So, that was my humble beginnings. And I had a kitchen in North London. I had this lovely landlady, Mrs. Kong, and you know, she was renting out her banquet kitchen and her banquet room for Jewish weddings, you know, every summer. And then the rest of the time it would be empty. And so she was like, you know, if you take it over and you're busy, then you'll be paying me rent 365 days a year, so you can have it on a trial for free. So she, again, you know, I always note everybody who's helped me at every juncture in my life, and everyone will have this in their life. You know, there'll always be someone that appears kind of like your guardian angel, if you like, to give you a helping hand to where you want to be. So so that's really, really helped me.
And while you were managing the business, you were also writing books at the time, is that right?
Well, actually, it was really difficult setting up Fuji. You know, I had a small fax machine, I had two kitchen staff, I had to write my own HACCP, I didn't even know what that was, you know, health and safety systems. And I got my local EHO to help me write that one. But, you know, we had to, you had to have all these things in place, and it was so hard. Honestly, it was the hardest thing I'd ever done in my life. And setting up that kitchen, and you know, seeing the orders come in, trying to canvas for orders between 9 and 12 every day, and then the orders are coming at 12, and then we'd make the food fresh and then have them collected, and then they were delivered the next day. And you know, that went on for quite some time, and at many points, you know, the business was going to close. I couldn't make it work. If you think, you know, a pot of noodle would cost £1.50 to make, and I was selling them, you know, it would cost around 80p to make, you know, and I would 80-90p depending on what it was, and I was selling them for £1.30, £1.50. There's not a lot of profit in there to sustain everything, and the stores were selling for £2.99. you know, I had to sell a lot of pots of noodles in order to make ends meet. And so I continued with it. And it was then that I met my now husband. At the time, I was dating him, and his sister, Fiona, fell in love with the noodles. She said, "Oh my God, Ching, these noodles are so delicious. You have to, you know, like, everyone needs to taste them." So, you know, her gorgeousness and her energy, and she introduced me to, she said, "Oh, you must come on UK TV. You must, you know, maybe somehow PR the noodles, and then you could sell maybe 100 boxes of noodles overnight if you have them on TV." And I didn't know what PR was. So I said to her, "Okay, I'll come in and meet your commissioner." So I went in with all my picnic and all my drinks and snacks and everything. And Gareth Williams, another guardian angel, he basically said, "Oh, I love these noodles. Why don't you come in for a screen test and maybe you can make it, you know, on television?" And I thought, great, this would be fantastic. So I went for a screen test. I made the noodles. Everyone loved it. And then they asked me to come back and cook. And I said, "Fantastic, I'll make the noodles." And then they're like, no, Ching, we just want you to cook a Chinese dish, whatever you think is delicious.
Right.
And that was my foray into TV, my very first TV appearance. And, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know why I was doing it. I just knew that I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed sharing my food, and as opposed to, you know, hiding away in this catering business, in this factory, making noodles, you know, as I actually sharing my culture. And yeah. So that was great for me. And then that led, one thing led to another. I ended up, you know, writing books, and the noodles sadly didn't make it into Waitrose, but my other drinks did, and then they got delisted. My soy drinks did. So I've tried to create many different things, and I've failed many times before, you know, I got to certain bits in my life. So everything, every product, every idea has been a journey.
Well, that's how you become successful. You know, no one became successful by not making any mistakes.
Yeah, I think so. I think it makes you, well, it makes you focus.
How do you find the TV work? I mean, you're a natural at it, but do you, at the time, did you enjoy it? Did you have to overcome anything yourself to get really into it?
Well, you know, I have to admit, I mean, the live cooking for Great Food Live, that's where I cut my teeth first, was fantastic. It was so much fun. You know, you don't have to worry about anything. You can just be yourself. And to this day, I still prefer the live experiences as opposed to the taping, because it's much more natural and you can just relax. It's like just talking to a friend, you know, and cooking for them. So that I enjoy the most. But my first TV show, called Ching's Kitchen, it was awful. It was so bad. I mean, I had no idea. And it was such hard work, you know. I have to get up about 5:30. I can do my own hair and makeup, go into the studio in this kitchen. It was actually Jamie Oliver's kitchen that he... I think the production team rented off and produced the show out of his Kuching's kitchen, and we had to do everything twice, and even then I was so bad at it, and we'd finished like at midday at night and I was exhausted, and I'd have to go back home and list to see all the emails and messages from my kitchen manager, who'd go, "Oh God, Ching, we had this complaint because, you know, some of the staff didn't put bean sprouts in that order," because I was still running my business as I was doing this. Mm-hmm. And so there were so many mistakes and things to catch up. And then I'd have to practice my recipes and think about the recipes I was going to make the next day. And so this went on for about 3 weeks, mm-hmm. because they filmed 60 recipes in about 15 working days. Which was like 3 weeks, and it was hell.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy it, and I didn't think that I would continue to be a TV chef. And so, you know, many people ask me now, and they say, "Well, I want to be a TV chef. I want to cook on TV. How do I go about it? And, you know, what advice would you give me?" And I said, "Well, the thing is, you know, TV, it's few and far between. You know, it's like, from my first TV show to my second TV show, it took 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then from my second one to my next one took 2 years. Mm-hmm. So you have to wait, and you have to wait until there's an opportunity. And you have to, you know, go with the flow and take everything, every work that you can. But you also have to have something that actually pays the bills, because, you know, it's media. Media is fickle, you know. It's like when they want you, when they don't want you, you know. So you need to be more in control of your own destiny. You have your own business, or have your own, or work for somebody else, and then try and make the TV thing work. But don't just think, "I just want to do, you know, TV," because it is a juggling act.
Yeah. Well, you've made many appearances. You've been on Saturday Kitchen, Sunday Brunch, BBC Food. Food and Drink, sorry, and I mean, among many others as well. And you've had your own series. How would you compare the TV work to making your own series?
What's different is most of those TV shows, aside from a few, are pre-recorded. So most of them are live, mm-hmm. and so I think that's the main difference. And then having my own shows, they're great. My own shows. You know, they allow you to be able to sort of share more of your recipes, and actually they you know, they breathe. There's just more time, you know, to share, really. And I love that. And they're your own food, your own style of cooking. I think that really comes through. And, you know, I loved all my series that I've done. You know, it's so much fun traveling, meeting new people, and eating. So it's I feel so blessed and grateful to have had all those experiences and to share. Yeah.
And did you have any in the pipeline when COVID-19 struck, or are you planning any more now?
So at the moment, I have a digital series that I'm planning. So luckily that's come through, so I'm very excited about that. So we'll go into pre-production soon in June and start shooting. My kitchen is fine, but we want to go out and about, so hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be able to do that. And so I'm very excited about that. And I love to collaborate and with lots of different, you know, people. Whether it's their product, just testing, I mean, not paid, you know, sometimes it's just giving them a helping hand. But I love people who are passionate about their product and their business.
Yeah.
And so that also excites me as well. And other brands as well. So, you know, I love working with brands to be able to share, really, in essence, what my food is about, which is, you know, easy home style cooking, that's achievable. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, to me, it's very important that, you know, if people learn how to cook, then they become even more connected to where the food is from. Mm-hmm. So, and also to themselves. See, I see cooking as a way to really open up yourself and understanding yourself, because the act of feeding yourself, nourishing yourself every day, should be celebrated more.
Where does your inspiration come from for your new recipes?
Oh, inspiration. That's, I find it in my journey of, I guess, progression in my career. It's been, first it was Ching's Kitchen, trying to make things easy, and as the opportunities have come. So I've grown to sort of, and developed along the way, in this journey. And I didn't set out to be a TV chef. I didn't set out to work in food. It happened by circumstance. And it was a way of survival, and I embraced it. So I've gone along with it. Yeah. And through the process, I've learned myself. And as I'm learning, I'm sharing. So I feel that I guess I'm, like a teacher, really.
Yeah.
Through my own experience.
Yeah, yeah, an amazing one as well. And you love to read, as we know. You also love to write. You already have an astonishing 9 cookbooks. Are you using this time to write another one?
Well, actually, yes. It's a bit embarrassed to say that, but I'm writing the, I think it's the 10th one. That's technically the 9th, but one of my others have been published. But when lockdown happened, actually it was a few weeks before lockdown, people started cancelling a few things anyway, because they were worried about the virus, and quite rightly so. And these are like classes, events and things. And so I really started to have my own quiet time in writing the next book. So it's all happened sort of in a very coincidental way, that actually I needed the peace and calm in order to finish this next book. And, I had that. So I'm very grateful for that. And it's allowed me to finish it finally. And I just handed it in so a few weeks ago. And there might be a few things outstanding still. I just saw an email from my...
this book.
Ah.
Which I love. It's fantastic, actually.
I've cooked
for many, many days with this cookbook, and the recipes come out fantastic. Absolutely love it.
Thank you. I should get you actually 2 of these. I should get you 1 of these each. I must get Kate to send it to you. These are my latest ones.
Oh, amazing.
Yes. So stir crazy and walk on.
Well, yes, I know. I saw them, but I actually had
these to you.
Actually. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy them. One of them is all stir fries, 100 stir fries, and the other one is more sort of Asian wok cooking. So it's a bit more,
Fantastic. Thank you. Will you try one for me as well?
Yes, I will, of course, definitely, definitely.
So you mentioned earlier on that your classes had been cancelled. Did you think maybe of going online with them and maybe doing online classes just to kind of...
Yes, so since then we found a way of doing it. Not all of them, because some of them require, people to go into the class, and that's what people pay for. And so I completely understand, that's the way they work. And so we're hoping, we've moved them to the second half of the year. So we're hoping that they will be able to continue. So, these are some fantastic schools. So hopefully, yeah, because there's nothing like, especially with cooking, to be able to do it there in situ. I think it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you feel that food trends are now changing due to COVID-19, with more people cooking from home?
I mean, there's been, everyone is cooking. Of course, you have to, you know, the restaurants are shut or the takeaway restaurants. So I think more and more people will cook at home. I think that will become the norm. But also, I think, you know, as soon as lockdown is lifted properly, and I say that, you know, as in more widely, then I think people will also support the restaurants and the hospitality industry, because there's nothing like, you know, we humans, we just love to connect. We love to be social. We love to eat together. There's nothing like sharing food together. It's like, it's a union of happiness. You know, and so whether it's friends or family or colleagues, you know, so I think it's very important, and I hope people will find the courage, you know, to conquer, you know, that innate fears. We come out of isolation and got to, you know, think, you know, to behave in a much more normal way, as we always have done, and I think, you know, it's been hard. It's definitely time, I think, at some stage now, for people to venture out, because otherwise it's not going to be normal.
Yeah, absolutely. So not only do you teach us how to cook, but you're also creating, you also created your own Lotus Wok to help us cook better. Tell us about how that idea came about.
So the Lotus Wok, it's my baby. And with everything that I do, with Asian cooking and Chinese cooking, you absolutely need a good wok. Now the Lotus Wok is actually sold out. So we're trying to get some more in. But you know, if you don't have a Lotus Wok, you can still do wonders in just a normal, ordinary wok. I'm not going to judge you on the wok you have.
Ordinary. I did try to buy your Lotus Wok. It's not possible at the moment.
Well, when we get one, we'll get one too for that.
What's your technology behind it?
So normal wok, you know, comes in many different materials. So they can be for aluminium, they can be carbon steel, they can be cast iron, which is heavier, and depending on the material, it's going to perform differently. Now I subscribe to a carbon steel wok, and this is what the Lotus Wok is made of, but instead of you know, patina being just put on it, which is maybe perhaps not as good for health, when I say non-stick coating, mine has been sandblasted with nanosilica particles. Now, silica is the derivative is sand. So if you can think, it's kind of like tiny sand crystals blasted in. And sand is used to make glass. So you see the smooth effect of glass. It's kind of a very, very microscopic, tiny particles that give a very smooth, non-stick performance. So I call it the Lotus Wok because it's like, you know, a raindrop falling just off a lotus leaf. Right. It just slides and glides off. And so that's the performance of the wok. And I'm really proud of it. It's got a shallow base and very deep sides, which is what you want. When I say shallow base, sorry, I mean a very small base, which is a sign of a good wok, because you want a small base so that there's an intense amount of heat concentrated, which allows you to sear the food. And if you want the deep side so that the food falls evenly and uniformly, so that when it cooks, all the ingredients are going to get that same level of heat distribution through. So it's very important that. Do not ever get a wok that has a very wide base and shallow sides, because that's a saucepan masquerading as a wok.
Right.
You're still chasing the food around. The food isn't falling uniformly to the center, you see. And that's the difference. And you're not going to, you know, when you put your, as soon as you put your garlic and your onions and everything, your holy trinity ingredients, your aromatics, if you like. You're going to have to start chasing it around, and there's more opportunity for it to burn because you can't get all the bits. So you have to keep stirring. A little bit more hard work.
Yeah.
Whereas with a wok, you can just give it a little flick, a little toss, and everything falls uniformly. So that's the difference.
Well, it sounds amazing. So please let me know when they are out because I want to get one of those.
Definitely. You'll be first to know.
So you're an ambassador of Chinese cooking around the world. How did that come about, and how does it feel to be an ambassador for Chinese cooking?
I think that's actually quite I don't think I'm an ambassador for Chinese cooking. I think I just enjoy my work. Okay. And I enjoy cooking and I enjoy sharing, and, you know, God willing, that I'll continue to do that. So I, you know, there's a lot of masterful chefs that I've learned from over the years, and really I give them the credit because, you know, the amount of skill and mastery that goes into creating, for example, your dim sum is just incredible. You know, some of the chefs in Canton, even in Macau and Hong Kong, you know, they've studied for about 12 years just in the art of dim sum. Mm-hmm. And it's really amazing. And so I think, you know, I love to teach, I love to share, and really those are the masterful chefs that, you know, I honor, because they've taught me, and, you know, and from what I know, I'm trying to teach everybody what I know and trying to dissect it and make it easier in a Western kitchen environment so that everyone can have a go. So that's what I do, really.
So you have a great quote about talent from a fortune cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us.
It's funny, fortune cookies and me. I love fortune cookies. I always have something, I don't know, something meaningful always comes to me in a fortune cookie. Anyway, there's this one time where I felt like I wasn't working so hard. And this fortune cookie said, talent will beat hard work. No, talent, was it? Let me just go back to it.
Let me help.
Yeah, can you just read it for a second? I haven't had an afternoon coffee yet.
It's hard work beats talent if talent doesn't work hard. And I absolutely love that quote. Absolutely love it.
It's true. It's true, though. If you can have all the talent in the world, yeah, but if you don't work hard, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kept me humble throughout these years. You know, just to keep working hard. Yeah. And you can outwork talent any day.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I would say to all young, you know, chefs, or, you know, anyone in any profession, really.
Mm. Yeah. It applies to all professions. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
So finally, Ching, tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
This is quite a challenging one. I don't know. there's many things. Let me see. I don't know. I love movies. So, you know, that's something, I mean, I think that's so generic though, but maybe in particular, I love martial art movies. So I grew up with things like, you know, Bruce Lee, with Jackie Chan, all of that. So, you know, I love.
Or was that? Did you like Kill Bill?
Yeah, Kill Bill. I love Kill Bill. I love Quentin Tarantino's films. A bit violent now for me, but yeah, you know, really good. you know, I just love anything with sort of martial arts. And so
did you ever learn any martial art yourself?
Well, I do, well, a little bit, but really bad at it. And I really want to go back doing it. But I love things like, you know, Tai Chi and a bit of Qigong. And so I love energy. I love energy work, and I'm fascinated. I guess that's what I would say that maybe you don't know about. I'm fascinated with, with energy, the universe, and the spiritual realm, if you like. So I love all things like that.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for spending your time with us. We really, really appreciate it. And guys, if you want to follow Ching, she's on Instagram at Ching He Huang, and I'm at Posh Nosh Girl. Thank you, Ching.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye. Thanks.